that we had, kind of scheduled to do this session to get out before the drop dead date. We kind of just threw everything on here and, we'll see where we go with them today. I think we'll just kind of stay, as far as I can see, right with the schedule, start right off the top. So with that, I'll open a work session on House Bill 2119. This is, Harrison, what's this bill do?
This is a bill that deals with the regulation of keeping of exotic animals. The bill modifies the definition of exotic animals. It, requires that exotic animals be kept in reasonable and prudent manner to avoid physical and financial risk to the public from an escape. It imposes strict liability on keepers of exotic animals for damage that they may cause, and it increases the fees for issuance and renewal of exotic animal permits. We also have -4 amendments, which further modify the definition of exotic and require the seller to provide the buyer with certain information about nutrition and care needs of the animals before selling. And it modifies the liability provisions related to the strict liability. There are some keepers who may be the target of illegal acts which cause the animals to escape. And so in those cases, they would not be strictly liable beyond their negligence.
So, Harrison, the -4s, I have -2s. These are old ones. Dr. Chuck and Dr. Clark, come on up if you'd like.
That's great.
I'm just kind of going through this stack of paperwork. As you know, we've had this bill around here. It has quite a long history, and I'm just going through all my file here. We have never adopted any of the amendments, as I understand, or have we? Where are we on this? Have we ever adopted any amendments before?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Chuck Craig with the Department of Ag. You asked us to get together with a work group to try to settle some of the issues that came up in the first hearing, which we've had a series of meetings, but there have been no amendments adopted to this point.
What about the -2s? Have the -4s incorporated everything?
The -4s incorporate everything that we were able to achieve agreement on. What we found a dilemma that we just couldn't resolve, and that was that if we, you know, originally we wanted to deregulate the smaller exotic animals that were not considered dangerous. However, we found that if we did that, they automatically would be regulated under the Department of Fish and Wildlife's wildlife integrity statutes. And since that seemed to not accomplish anything in terms of deregulation, and the exotic animal owner community objected to that, we just decided that we weren't going to pursue that particular line anymore. So what we're left with is sort of a tweaking of the law that addresses some areas that we've had concerns about in the program. I think Dr. reviewed quickly with you.
I understand we have a conceptual amendment, maybe even to the -4s here, concerning this comes from.
We do, and Dr. Clark will point that out when we get to it, Mr. Chair.
Okay, go ahead, Dr. Clark. Tell us where we are here with this bill.
Chairman Wells, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Andrew Clark. I'm the state veterinarian at the Department of Agriculture. The ODA exotic animal permit system addressed by this bill has been subject to several reviews by the working group established to deal with it. The initial changes, which dealt with deregulation of small felines and New World primates, has been completely removed, and in this draft will continue to be regulated by ODA. The single species, which we intended to remove but need to discuss, would be the regulation of wolves, which by definition of ODFNW is an indigenous rather than exotic animal. Wolves would then be addressed by ODFNW under authority of the wildlife integrity process. But again, this has just come up subject for review. Changes to the original statute are as follows. Number one, the definitions for exotic animals have been simplified. Number two, USDA registered facilities have been added to the exclusions in addition to licensed facilities. The omission of this terminology in the previous statute was an oversight, and its inclusion is now a technicality. Registered facilities are research and teaching institutions, including OHSU, other universities, and private research facilities. Three, terminology has been changed so that USDA licensed and registered facilities are not excluded from liability clauses of the statute, as was previously the case. Four, clarification is made that a person who wants to keep an animal must have a permit before having the animal in their possession. Five, a section provides for educational material to be provided to buyers of exotic animals before the sale takes place. The idea is made is that they be made aware of the particular responsibilities involved in exotic animal ownership prior to purchase. Six, in several places, risk is more specifically designed as being both physical and financial, and strict liability is added. In cases of purposeful sabotage or illegal release of animals by other parties, the strict liability is excluded. Seven, the permit fee is capped at $300 rather than the $20 to more realistically reflect the costs, the actual cost to ODA. I would be very happy to deal with any questions you might have.
I'm trying to catch up here. This is not a correct hand endorsed bill then, because this still has the old $600 in there.
Mr. Chair, members, I was noticing that incorrect feature. I hope that there are not others, but that is incorrect. You're right.
Otherwise, this is supposed to be a correct hand endorsed.
That is my hope.
Starting out bad here, aren't we?
Not a good head, Sheriff, I must say.
We have an amendment.
No, it's not a good head, but
Mr. Chair, we have printed dash fours.
Yeah,
do you have those?
Yes, I do. But I think Harrison put together a hand in gross.
I got it.
And I was going through it, and I saw that it still had the $600 on it. And I was saying, I was wondering if whether we ought to be looking at this. Engrossed or not.
Maybe, Mr. Chair, we should just look at the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a copy of the dash fours with me. Is there a...
That's what I have. This is the latest one.
They should be behind the staff measure summary.
I don't have those either. Sergeant.
Now, this is the one I've read, and this doesn't line up with this.
Dash two.
But then if you look at
this, the deal.
Yeah, but this.
We're all fumbling around here on our paper.
So does everyone have a dash four now?
Yes, I do. Yeah, that's the one I'm familiar with.
So we should be working off of the dash four and the original bill is what we should be working off of. Because the dash four is not a complete a replacement of the original bill. It's an amendment.
We must have not got it in.
Yes, this is the one I'm original.
How are we doing? Everybody caught up on the paperwork? Okay, go ahead, Dr. Clark.
Chairman Wells, we need to deal with the issue of wolves,
okay.
Which by this, in the present form, wolves would be excluded from permitting by ODA. But it has just recently been brought up that perhaps we should consider reinstating wolves as was originally the case in this situation, so that if wolves are to be reintroduced into Oregon, there would be consideration through this statute and the Department of Agriculture concerning the issue of reintroduction of wolves.
And well, we're looking at line 18 on the dash fours or line 14 on the original bill. Any wolf or canine?
I think line 18 we would add any wolf or other member of the family canidae. Not indigenous.
Or do you just want to remove the brackets?
Hmm.
If we remove the brackets, then we would strike the addition member of the family candidate.
Any wolf or any canine, not indigenous, that'd go back to that language there, them.
That would all take care of the situation we're dealing with, yes.
So let's conceptually amend this by removing then the brackets and replacing that language, wolf or any, in the original bill. And then we're leaving in the original bill weighing more than 50 pounds.
No.
Are we looking at the same? Is that the same? This is not the same spot.
Why don't we have
in the original bill?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, there's it. It's line 14, Mr. Chair, in the original bill.
Mr. Chair, members, the way section ORS 609.305 is stricken from the original bill by this amendment and then placed in as section 3. Originally, that was section 1 of the original bill, and now it is section 3 in the amendments.
I don't, Mr. Chair.
Representative Overlaw.
I don't think it's quite clear yet what we're doing with wolves, and so I think we need to be very clear about the language before we vote.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe the doctor could speak.
See, in the original bill, they've added on line 13 new language, and that still stays there.
Mr. Chair, members. You'll see that line 3 of the dash 4 says delete lines 4 through 16. So you delete the entire section 1 of this bill.
Okay, here we go. Okay, everything is then we're starting all over.
And then you're starting over with these definitions in section 3, which starts on line 11 of your dash 4. So a dash 4 amends this existing ORS by deleting the things in the dash 4.
Do you have the dash 4s there in front of you and see the language they were going to put about the
mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe reading from there, you can say what you want.
If it were to read, if we could hand engross it to read, any wolf or any member of the family candidate. So it would be reinstating wolf or any, and then bracket canine.
Okay.
So the final form would be any wolf or any member of the family candidate not indigenous to Oregon. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Byer.
It wasn't real clear to me in the dealing with reintroduction. I mean, the wolf is indigenous to Oregon, is that correct? So if we're not including the wolf as in this bill, the indigenous wolf.
As we're making the conceptual amendment, wolves would continue to be regulated by us as exotics, Representative Byer.
Well, Mr. Chair, it would then read any wolf or any member of the Canadae family not indigenous to Oregon. The wolf is indigenous to Oregon, is it not?
That is correct.
Right.
So the way I read that then, this would not regulate wolves.
He would only regulate a limited number if there is a wolf out there that's not indigenous. You're right.
Right. Chairman Wells, Representative Byer. The idea is that we continue to regulate indigenous wolves, as has been the case previously. The concept is that we regulate indigenous wolves in addition to members of the family candidate which are not indigenous to Oregon.
But Mr. Chair, this is the definition of exotic animal, and here you're saying an exotic animal is any wolf or member of the family not indigenous to Oregon, but the wolf is indigenous to Oregon.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Overloff.
Thank you. If you mean to regulate both indigenous and non-indigenous, and assuming they're all member of the same family, which I don't know if the wolves are or not, then it really should say any wolf or any member of the family can candidate. Accept the species and leave off the indigenous language if you really mean to regulate both indigenous or non-indigenous.
The problem there is that things like coyotes are also indigenous canines. Excuse me, Chairman Wells, Representative Herbalov. There are other members of the family canidae which we do not propose to regulate. The original statute, as it has stood for many years, regulates wolves. And then canines, additionally canines not indigenous to Oregon. However we can state that, we could perhaps say...
indigenous or non-indigenous.
Mr. Chair, I believe this is an incorrect reading of the statute. So the original statute says any wolf or any canine not indigenous to Oregon, but the wolf is indigenous to Oregon. So that means the wolf is not regulated by the statute.
Here,
right here, in line 14.
I believe you're right. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We want to regulate wolves, right?
Right.
Mr. Chairman,
said any wolf and any member of the family, would that not do it? Because any wolf then would include indigenous.
Not indigenous is the issue here.
But if I understand Representative Beyer correctly, and I think he's right, they are indigenous. So if we include any wolf, that does it. And then
it's the not indigenous representative who's causing the problem.
Mr. Chairman,
we're going to need an attorney here.
Mr. Chairman,
straighten us out.
But Representative Beyer brought up a good point. In the original law, the existing law right now, limits it to wolves that are not indigenous.
Yeah, exactly.
If you read the original statute,
Chuck,
yet you say that you regulate indigenous, but under the statute, that authority isn't there unless it's under some other kind of...
You understand that Chuck, what we're talking about is the non-indigenous seems to be where we're hung up here.
I believe I did. For the record, Chuck Taylor from Legislative Council. If I might suggest, and this is conceptual language, but it might be easier simply to split up the matter into two paragraphs and perhaps say that it does not include a wolf. And then in a separate paragraph, say it doesn't include any non-wolf member of the family canidae. Would that address the issue?
Harrison had kind of the same suggestion. You said any member of the family canidae. How did you say that, Harrison?
If you put wolf after that phrase, it will not appear to be modified. So you say any member of the family canidae not indigenous to Oregon, or any wolf, except the species dog.
Would that imply that the species dog then was a type of wolf, or create some confusion? Mm-hmm. I think it might be cleaner just to separate them out and say, does not include any wolf, and then in a separate paragraph say it does not include any non-wolf member of the family canidae, not indigenous to Oregon, except the species Canis familiaris. At any rate, that would be my suggestion as to the clearest way to do it, would be to totally separate them and not combine them.
Chuck, if you look at the original statute, I think one of the confusions going on this side is the doctor has said that they now regulate all wolves. But if you look at the original statute before we get around tinkering with it in any way, shape, or form, it appears that the authority were only non indigenous, but yet they're regulating indigenous as exotic animals. Now, so we're changing policy.
That's a boar, Chuck. Any will be regulated for anything.
Chairman Wells, Representative Uberlau. I think certainly the wording in the current statute is ambiguous and could be read to have the interpretation that you're placing on it.
Do we have an agreement with you three up there, which way we're going to go on this?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess before we change this, I'd like to know where the department got the authority to regulate wolves, because it's not in the statutes. And that's, I'm confused with that. I think maybe the Department of Fish and Wildlife or someone needs to speak to this issue, because clearly my reading of the statute says that if in fact the wolf is an indigenous species, which I believe it is, it may be not here now, but it is an indigenous species, and the Department of Ag is now regulating it for, since I don't know when, they appear to be doing that beyond their scope.
As I would understand, I agree, because it says any wolf is not indigenous in its current language.
Chairman Wells, may I clarify our understanding of it? Granted, I inherited this system. It has been in effect for many years. But it says we are to regulate any wolf or any canine not indigenous to Oregon. That's the language of the statute as currently. We are to regulate any wolf or any canine not indigenous. That would seem to me to be the basis on which we have been regulating wolves for many years. And if clarification is needed, perhaps we could write, as Chuck suggests, two paragraphs, any family member of the family Kennedy.
So you're saying Oregon, that language, any wolf, does not relate to the non-indigenous on the
animal. That is correct. It says we regulate any wolf, freestanding, or any canine not indigenous.
Chairman Wells, I would point out that where you have a statute that can be interpreted more than one way, the agency charged with carrying out that statute is entitled to some, what's the word? I just lost the word. At any rate, if their interpretation of the statute is not clearly wrong, then the interpretation is entitled to some weight.
Any wolf, or then the canine deals with the non-indigenous.
Mr. Chair, I think one of the reasons why we took the position we did is we didn't see the need to mention wolves unless it was intended for us to have the ability to regulate, because it could have just said any non-indigenous canine, and it would have taken care of it. So that was part of the rationale, I'm sure, that it was specifically mentioned, and so we interpreted it the way Dr. Clark said.
Well, if we take the brackets away and go back to that original language, are we all right? Any wolf? Or then the canine member, not indigenous, interpreting just like we have?
Representative Wells, as a matter of policy, my suggestion would be always to clarify the statute and remove the ambiguity where possible.
So then how would you like to word that, Chuck?
My suggestion would be to place that into separate paragraphs and say that an exotic animal does not include any wolf, and then say that it does not include any non-wolf member of the family Canidae not indigenous to Oregon other than Canis familiaris.
Can we conceptually do that and move this bill today?
Certainly, I think if people are clear on the concept, that is something that we could do when we go ahead and do the final amendments.
Okay. I think we're pretty clear that we're still going to regulate wolves, and I think we have the language cleared up as far as the non-indigenous then. Sounds like. Anything else then on this bill? Chuck?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Crimel?
If I can just clarify then, so it's going to be, the read-in will be as used in all those numbers. Exotic animal means, and it'll be any wolf, and then four would be any member of this family candidate not indigenous to Oregon. Is that how that would read then, Chuck?
I would suggest the second one say any non-wolf member of the family candidate.
Okay. Representative Byer, are you all right on it now?
Oh, we're conceptually amending, I assume?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that it? Is everyone happy on this? Mr. Gilmore, you all straight on this?
Happy or can live with it? There's a difference. Yeah.
With that, then, we need a motion to adopt the dash fours into the original bill. We still have the original bill, so we'll be amending it.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash four amendments to House Bill 2119.
Representative Crumel moves the dash fours. Any discussion? Anyone opposed? If they've adopted, then the dash fours.
Do you need a motion to adopt the conceptual amendments into the
rowing?
Mm-hmm.
Just amend your motion, the dash fours as conceptually amended.
Okay. I will amend my motion.
We need a motion to move this to the floor.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2119 as amended to the floor to the due pass recommendation.
Any other discussion? Samantha, you'd like to call the roll, please.
Gilmore?
Yes.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative
Hunter?
Yes.
Representative Fire?
Aye.
Representative Decker?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative
Crutch?
Yes.
Representative
Cummins?
Aye.
I'll carry this bill. I've carried one in a while. We're going to close the work session on 2119, and we'll open a work session on 2373. This is Representative Byer's bill. I don't know where we're going with that. Do we have some amendments, or where are we on this bill, Harrison?
We do have a dash one amendment, which should be in your measure packet behind the measure summary. We have a hand in grocer, which I'm a little scared to give out now.
There was a computer glitch.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to speak to the dash one amendments?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The dash one amendments reflect the testimony from our public hearing held about a week ago to take crabs out of the bill and make it so that just a fishing license would be needed for the harvesting of clams. Because of the relating clause in the bill, which is relating to shellfish tags, not to fishing licenses or to clams or shellfish directly, we had to develop a shellfish tag. The shellfish tag will be issued in accordance with the license for no additional charge.
So, Representative Byer, that means everyone who buys a fishing license will get a shellfish tag automatically?
That is correct.
So what's good? What are you using?
And will they have to pay additional for that shellfish tag under the current statute? It's $1.50 per tag. The amended version of 2100.
Mr. Chair, no, because it specifically says, I'm trying to find where it is, lines 15 and 16 of the dash one, it says the commission may not charge a separate or additional fee for the shellfish tag. So it will be...
How about the agents? Who issued it?
What it will be, a fishing license will just read somewhere on the license that this fishing license includes a shellfish tag. There will be no additional work required by the agent fee or anything like that. It'll just be part of the license.
Okay, we have anybody from Fish and Wildlife Joe would like to come on up.
Where's the sketch you? Why do you even need it?
I'll let Joe answer the question. Why do we need it? I was going to answer Judy's question.
Joe, can you give us your handle on this issue?
So then you have a handle on how many commands there are.
Chairman Wells, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollator. I'm the assistant to the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. As we've previously testified, there's a situation where if an Oregon resident or a resident from any place but Washington State goes to Washington to clam, it costs $20 per tide to clam. The converse of that is any non-resident can come to Oregon and clam free. If the shellfish license were included in a fishing license, then an out-of-state resident would at least have to buy a one-day license. At a very minimum, they'd have to buy a one-day license to clam that day. And so we support this bill as a fairness issue with the interstates. And we, you have a fiscal that shows that we would gain some additional revenue from this. That additional revenue will be used for shellfish research. We were extremely lucky in the new Carissa disaster in Coos Bay and Walport in that no oil of any substantial amount got into the bays, but if that sort of thing did happen, we don't have the resources right now to do the baseline studies and the research on the clams to know what was affected. If it would have been affected. And so we would use this money, extra money from the shellfish tag, to build that program back up. And as Representative Beyer has suggested, we would simply print on the back of the angling license or on the front of it that this license includes a shellfish tag.
Now, this would go into effect then, evidently probably 1st of January when we're issuing the new licenses for next year.
Representative Wells, that's correct.
Does it say that in the bill, in the amendments, when this goes into effect?
Let me look in the original bill. It doesn't say in the amendments.
Mr. Chair, it does not say, it does not put a starting date in the original bill or the
next.
Joe, let me ask you one question. It just dawned on me. If a person is fishing for marine fish, such as perch and greenling, and they harvest a mussel for bait, does that require him then to have a fishing license, not because he needs the license to fish, but because he needs the license to pull the mussel from the rock?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thompson, I have a staff member in the audience that can probably answer that question if Kay Brown would come forward, because as I recall, there's something in the statute about the use of shellfish for bait in another part of the statute.
I think you're right, but I can't remember.
Kay Brown, answer that.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kay Brown with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. The requirement for an angling license includes all ocean fish, so it really doesn't matter whether you're taking a mussel or any other critter. The fact that they're taking ocean fish requires them to have an angling license.
That's their status now?
Yes.
So then they're covered. There's no problem.
Right. That's correct.
Okay. Can I have a follow-up question?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In the clam, there's what's called paralytic shellfish poisoning.
Correct.
And you don't handle the research on paralytic shellfish poisoning. Is that right?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Representative Thompson, that's handled through the Department of Agriculture, through their shellfish sanitation program.
But you do handle a lot of the ability to get the information out to the public when there is a warning on paralytic shellfish poisoning. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, we assist the Department of Agriculture. They're really the lead agency that sends out the news release. They send it to us, and we help distribute the information.
Final question.
Yes, please.
So, if you generate this extra money, and I, excuse me, the fiscal $50,000, I guess it is, what exactly are you going to do with this money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, what we'd like to do with that money is help us in getting additional inventory information on the status of our shellfish resources in Oregon, which we do not have a very good status on right now. And as Joe mentioned, situations like the New Carissa that would, you know, the possibility of an oil spill that might come into an estuary, we'd not have the baseline information that's necessary to protect the state's interest in something like that.
Representative Thompson.
Does that mean then you're going to hire another FTE to handle this situation, or how are you going to do this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, that would be the ideal situation. I don't know that there is, I don't know what the status is in terms of this going to Ways and Means, but we would probably do it within our existing staff. It would just give us some additional resources.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What about then this date issue? How would that be worked in? Do we, as I would understand, this bill is passed. It does not have an emergency clause on it. So it's going to affect 90 days after close of session. Then what happens?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a really good point, because if it, assuming that we are through here early July, we could be in a situation where during the fall of this year, a shellfish license were required, and we wouldn't have the ability to print the tags differently for the 3 months at the end of the year. So I would hope that we could conceptually amend this bill to have its starting date be January 1st of the year 2000.
Okay.
I'd have to defer to the bill's author.
Mr. Chair, I think that would be very appropriate. We wouldn't want to start a program like this in the middle of a year.
Right. You print up your licenses and everything for a full year's supply, you know, those dates, and, you know, that's all done. And then you redesign for the next year. You redesign new licenses every year, I would think.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We redesign the angling licenses
different color,
annually.
Different color or whatever. So then that would give you enough lead time. About 2 or 3 months to incorporate this law into your new design for the 19 or the year 2000 licenses.
That's correct.
One last question.
Representative Thompson.
If you're going to go out and do this shellfish assessment, how are you going to go about accomplishing a shellfish assessment since they're so volatile in their populations on different species? When you have such a small time frame where the ocean's available for you to do beyond that grounds, how are you going to spend this money is what I'm trying to get down to.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thompson, I think that how we do any kind of scientific study depends upon advice from our scientists, and the first thing that I do is go down to talk to our shellfish experts and ask them for their advice on how to design long-term baseline population assessments. I think it's probably like any kind of populations that you well know, some groundfish live to be 80 or 90 years old. And if we're going to have good populations of these shellfish, some of which live to be 20 or more years old, and as you say, their abundances vary with ocean conditions, then we have to do a long-term baseline study. I don't think you can do a snapshot in 1 year and know what you have.
Okay. And then members, as I would see it, we have you have kind of a hand engrossed. 2373 shows the new language going in on page 3 of the original bill, referring to angler license. So I would think then that's all section 2. So I would think then we need section 3, which would then in that, and what we would put then the date conceptually. and that date would be this bill, conceptual language would be this measure, or however that stated, would go into effect January 1, 2000.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I believe that would be correct.
That'd be under Section 3 at the end.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Deckard.
I move, would you accept the motion?
Yes, we can move the dash ones as conceptually amended.
I move the dash ones as conceptually amended with the date January 1st in Section 3, January 1st, 2000, to House Bill 2373.
You got that, Harrison? I think we've created a Section 3 here.
Yes.
Any discussion of the motion?
Yes.
Representative Thompson.
I'll go along with this because of the problem in the northern part of the state. I don't believe the department's going to change the population or do anything to improve the population or decrease the population in the state of Oregon. I have problems with these kind of regulations where we really don't add anything, but we do charge money. But I do understand what happens in Clatsop County, and I hate to see it come to this, but I'll support this one.
Any other discussion? Anyone opposed to adopting the dash ones?
Yes.
Dash ones into House Bill 2373. So adopted. So now we have 2373 as amended, conceptually adopted, and we need a motion to...
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2373 as amended to the House floor with a new pass.
Any discussion?
I just make a comment. I agree with what Representative Thompson said in discussion with the motion. I would encourage the department to use any additional revenue that comes in research on shellfish. Specifically, the last two or three years, there's been this toxic, I don't know the technical name for it, but it seems if we can find a way, if there's a way they can study that and figure out why that is and what's causing that to happen, so we could, you know, hopefully keep the clamming season open for longer periods of time instead of having to close for many months of the year like it has been the last few years, then I could see this would be a benefit to both the people who enjoy to clam, such as myself, and the residents and the people of the coastal community, because they rely on that clam fishery for much of their economic income, as people, tourism coming over there to harvest shellfish, and when the clamming season is closed, it severely cripples their economy. So hopefully the department, and I would like to, you know, direct them to use some of this money to find out, do studies to see if they can somehow stop this toxic or
red tide, I believe it's called.
Yeah, whatever the technical name right. It is, Representative Thompson knows that.
Or is that something else? Red tide?
Mr. Chairman, that's one of the things that affects shellfish. There are a number of other pathogens that they concentrate.
Okay, we have a motion to adopt 2373 as amended. Is there any other discussion? Samantha, you like to call the roll, please?
Chair Wells?
Yes.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative
Yes.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Decker?
Yes.
Representative Hopkins?
Yes.
Representative Trump?
Yes.
Representative
Trumbull? Aye. House Bill 2373, received the constitutional vote, is adopted, and we'll move it to the floor. Representative Byer, I'd like to carry your bill.
Yes.
You're welcome to class here today. Where are you all from? Oh, this is the Willamette Christian group that I'm supposed to be meeting with, I think, later. I'm supposed to be meeting with you, I believe, at 10:45 up in the gallery. It's nice to see you here today. This is the Ag and Forestry Committee, and we deal with issues involving agriculture and forestry community and wildlife in this committee. So With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2373, and we're just kind of following the schedule here today, top to the bottom. You want to jump ahead? Well, we can't keep him waiting. We will make an exception. We'll open a work session on House Bill 3505.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome back to this committee. You're getting to be a regular here, and we're going to give you an honorary membership. We last dealt with 3506. What's happening with this bill?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to have an honorary committee assignment because I'm afraid I'm losing my other committee assignments as I come and represent my agricultural bills before your committee. 3505 is different than what we had looked at 3506, and I passed that to the floor in a previous session. 3505 deals also with the field-loaded agricultural trucks. Now, there are two sets of amendments, and what I'd like to do is make sure that only the Dash 1 amendments are taken into consideration. The Dash 2 amendments were considered, and we do have a concern with the Dash 2 amendments. So if you could just refer to the House Bill 35.
We're waiting to get our Dash 1s here.
Okay.
Maybe might just hold it here just a little bit.
You bet.
We all have Dash 2s.
And you also, you members, you may have a hand in grocer, but that is on the Dash 2, so you'll want to ignore that one.
So you would be looking at the original House Bill 3505 and the 3505-1 actual amendment. And if I may explain, the Dash 2 amendments, we felt probably liberalized the issue more than what we were prepared or what should be prepared to take on. The Dash 1 amendments, I believe, fairly deal with the issue that is at hand. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 3505 deals with field-loaded farm products where they're being loaded in a field without the benefit of a set of scales. We've had testimony from some of the agriculturists and the growers, as well as the ag folks, that talk about specific gravity and some of the various pieces of farm-loaded produce, the potatoes, the onions, the sugar beets. The specific gravity is an unknown to a person without a science degree and a set of scales on a tractor and the loader. And sometimes just the distance of the truck, the difference between the truck and the tractor, the loader itself, will cause a slight weight differential. What happens is that you'll see that the beginning on the face page, line 11, there's an insert after number one there, subsection one. And the insert would say, except as provided in subsection 2 of this section. And then it goes on and provides for the standard overweight fee schedule. And so,
so it's after line 25, we're inserting the heart of your amendment.
That's exactly correct. After line 25 is the heart of the amendment inserts it. But up until that point, from line 11 through 25, Mr. Chair, is basically present law. And so we reiterate present law so as to be certain that is basically remains in statute. And from that point forward, then the subsections are renumbered. But then the subsection 2, which is being inserted, indicates that on line 5 of the Dash 1 amendments, indicates that for these specific field-loaded trucks carrying agricultural produce, that the fine or the penalty prescribed will be one half of the amount stated in number one, except that the penalty will not be less than $5, and then it would apply to farm vehicles, which are which are the F plates or any other form vehicles that are described under ORS 805-300, so they could include farm vehicles from out of state. This would deal with farm vehicles being brought across at in the Umatilla area, farm vehicles being brought across back and forth between the state line with California and the Klamath area. Then as to item number B, on line 9 of the Dash 1 amendments, they are transporting agricultural products, and C, they're loaded within the field without the benefit of a scale. And finally, and this is probably the most important part of that, is the maximum weight that this would apply to would be 3,000 pounds. And what that does is that says that gives you some latitude relative to the distance of the truck from the loader, the specific gravity of the potato, sugar beet, or whatever was being grown, meant in the case of Representative Krupp, loaded in one of his fields, out of one of his fields. But that the maximum overweight that would receive the benefit of the half-duty fine, if you will, would be up to 3,000 pounds. And then from that point forward, you would go back up to subsection 1. Those trucks over the 3,000 pounds start getting...
Well, so in essence, Representative Butler, that one-half only applies to 3,000 and under in that schedule up above.
That's exactly right, Mr. Chair. And again, we're just trying to accommodate. We're not trying to accommodate folks that would intentionally try and push the limits. We're trying to accommodate those folks who are field loaded and are not do not have the benefit of trying to understand exactly what the weight may be. I think one of the proponents of 3506 testified that the trucks are so much heavier. And incidentally, we're hearing now the testimony and Ways and Means Transportation Economic Development of Director Grace Kronikin, and one of the things that I've asked her to do is to help me in the interim to determine if we can't start to figure out ways to drop the weights of the actual trucks themselves so that this additional produce could be carried. But one of the testimonies...
They make aluminum for that.
and that's one of the suggestions that we've got, is that perhaps there could be more aluminum or other structural changes. But one of those farmers who testified relative to 3506 indicated that in the morning, on the sugar beet truck, in the morning a different employee shows up in the morning and jumps in the truck and takes it out to the field, looking at the bed of the truck, looking at the weight of the truck, looking at how the truck sits in the farmyard, they couldn't tell if it had already been loaded. In other words, to load the truck to its full maximum capacity, so far as legal capacity is concerned, you couldn't see the sugar beets.
Yeah. We're going to need to move along, Representative Butler. We have several other bills here. So we realize that farmers never load to the limit, and we need more aluminum, and that we heard all those good words. Steve Johnson, are you in agreement with this issue? All right, come on up.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Steve Johnston with ODOT. We've worked with Representative Butler trying to get craft wording that will work. There is one concern which we don't know yet, and that is regarding the Federal Highway Administration, if they would believe we still have effective penalties for violations. We think the way the wording is that we're probably all right, but just want to get on the record that there could be a problem with Federal Highway.
See, this doesn't have any limitation on interstate freeways, as our other bill does it?
Mr. Chairman, no, sir.
I think with that, if it's the pleasure of the committee, we'll move ahead.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3505. I move the dash ones first.
Dash one amendments, yes. Any discussion on the dash ones? Anyone opposed? So adopted the dash ones, the 3505. Representative Uberlaw?
Yes, I move the House Bill 3505 as amended by the dash ones to the floor with the two-pass recommendation.
Any discussion? Samantha, you'd like to call the roll, please. Yes.
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 Yes. Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative Kraft?
Well, considering the carrier, the...
Yeah, okay.
Representative Trumbull?
Aye.
House Bill 3505, receiving a majority of votes, is moved to the floor. This is Representative Butler's bill, and I think he'd like to carry it, so it's your pleasure.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, it's a pleasure to have dealt with the your committee, and I thank you, and I also express gratitude to Mr. Johnston for his help from the Department of Transportation. Thank you most kindly.
Thank you. We find that really all those people over at ODOT are not bad to work with. So with that, I close the work session on House Bill 3505, and we'll move back up to House Bill 3461. So, a work session on 3461. Harrison, Mr. Dave Nelson, he'd probably like to come up. What does 3461 do, and do we have all the paperwork we need on that? Samantha will be bringing this in.
Send that last comment over as a dissent.
Mr. Chair, the original bill here authorized annual permit for over-width vehicle carrying bagged grass seed over route specified in the permit. You'll recall some testimony that those bags have flaps, and sometimes the flaps are held out and measured. We have a dash one amendment that, in addition to bagged grass seed, allows for the annual permit to cover mint leaves and sacks, grass hay, grass seed straw, cereal grain straw. Also, there's an amendment suggested by ODOT. Where law enforcement officers find a vehicle over the limit, the officer generally has discretion to allow the vehicle to proceed or to hold the vehicle until it is made legal. The amendment would allow a law enforcement officer that same leeway when dealing with a vehicle which is over the limits of a permit. It does not mandate that. Just gives the officer discretion to determine that it's safe to proceed.
The dash one amendments then are what we're looking at here.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
This is line two has the mint leaves in sacks.
Line two, where, Mr. Chair?
Line two on the dash one.
Here is a copy of dash one.
The dash one amendment says after seed insert four mint leaves in sack.
We've got the hand in gross.
We've got the hand in gross. Dash one amendment.
We have the hand in gross.
Yeah, that's what Harrison sent out.
I don't know.
We thought we had actually seen this.
Did Representative Krupp get dash one amendment, Samantha?
I just have a hand in gross version. All I have. Mr. Chair.
And I think I did the hand in gross version of that later in the night than the previous.
So, Mr. Chair, we're just, and Harrison, we're on line 17A of page 4 of the hand in gross, which is also the same as line,
page 4, line 14.
Yeah, and in gross version, it says a vehicle or combination of vehicles hauling grass, hay, grass seed, straw, or cereal grain.
That's why we added.
You're suggesting that we add the words mint?
No, on page 4.
No, mint is added on
page 4, line 14.
Yeah.
After seed, insert four mint leaves in.
Okay, after seed, all right.
Mr. Chair, if you're ready to accept the motion, I would move the dash ones into the bill.
Okay. Now, as you understand, current limits on trucks is 8.5 feet. This would allow.
Are you guys all right with
this? To 9.5 feet, I believe. Dave, they're going to move this bill before you get a chance to say anything.
Mr. Chair, that's fine. I just want to advise the committee again, for the record, Dave Nelson of the Oregon Seed Council. The amendment on line 4 that deals with the over height portion of the bill is technically incorrect, and Mr. Johnson and I have agreed on that new language will have to be added in the Senate. We would appreciate you moving the bill out. And what we suggest, so that you know what we are suggesting and have suggested to Legislative Council to correct the problem, that there were, if you go on the bill, the printed bill, and on page 4, line 3 in subsection 10, to accommodate the over height problem that Mr. Schellenberg had brought to the committee at the hearing, take words out of the dash 1 amendment on line 4, subsection 14, and you would do away with that subsection.
I don't know if we're keeping up with you, at least.
Okay.
I'm not.
Are you?
Where are we? Let's go back, Dave.
Okay, let me
we're here.
Go back to.
Could I ask a question? Now, is this what you plan on doing in the Senate?
Yes.
Or what you're going to do here?
We would do this in the Senate. So if you incorporated the amendments, and we just want to advise you, there are also was a question that we, from the Association of Oregon Counties, on the over width portion, and the question was, do you need 9'6" or can you get by with 9 feet even? And we said we would look into that and work with them to make sure that we'll get the minimum that we need, not just pick a number.
Where is the height issue, Dave?
The height issue is in two places, Mr. Chair. On subsection 10 is what we would suggest amending the 14.4 to 14.
Well, subsection 10 is page 4.
Page 4, line 3.
There we go. 14.4.
Yes, so we would simply add the words after, toward the end of line 3, where it says grass, seed, straw. We would add the words grass, hay, or cereal grain, straw in bales. And that then delete sub 14. We wouldn't need a sub 14 at that point. And then increase the 14.4 on line 4 to 14.6. And that accommodates all of the problems. And we would do that in the Senate.
Mr. Chair.
You lost me there, that last part.
Okay. On line 4, Mr. Chair.
Original bill, page 4.
Original bill, page 4, line 4.
It talks about 14.4.
Yes, we would increase the 14.4 to 14.6 on a route-specific.
Okay.
Yes, sub 10 already requires a permit and a route-specific layout on an annual permit.
That's all we're doing?
Yes, we'd increase the height from 14.4 to 14.6.
Okay.
And you would be on line 3, Mr. Chair, you would be adding those words, and this would be what we would do in the Senate, would be add the words grass, hay.
No, that's after grass, seed, straw.
Yes, grass, seed, straw, comma, grass, hay, comma, or cereal grain, straw in bales.
Cereal grain, straw. Okay, great.
And then we would,
President Thompson?
I would like to hear from the Department of Transportation if it's possible. Is this meet your approval of what we've talked about?
Chairman, Representative Thompson, as Dave just outlined it, yes.
Okay, as I just wanted to make sure because there's some assumptions here that were pretty.
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't have him up here.
Well, you just never know.
Don't look under the desk. You may have his foot on top of his toe. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is there any reason we can't conceptually amend this in now?
Yes.
Any trouble in the Senate?
That would be your rules, Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp.
We seem to be conceptually amending everything else here today.
Okay. That would be fine.
Mr. Chair, members, we did get an email that said members will do what members will do.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair,
I would suggest we do then.
Yeah. Chair, I feel comfortable.
We'll do.
Mr. Chair, just for clarity, I'll submit that language to Harrison.
Okay, great.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Meyer.
I move we suspend the rules for purposes of amending the Dash 1 Amendment, House Bill 3461, by insert. First we have to amend, let's first have to move the amendment into the bill, then have to amend the accessory amendment.
Okay, we have a motion to move the dash ones into the bill. Anyone opposed in discussion? So moved.
Mr. Chair, now I would move to conceptually amend the amended bill.
Mr. Chair, the gentleman from ODOT has a question, sir.
Dave? Yes, Mr. Chair, my suggestion would be is in the movement of the dash ones that you delete the lines 4 and 5, which is the one that's being taken care of in number 10.
Mr. Chair, I was just getting to that with my conceptual amendment.
Go to delete 4 and 5 on the dash ones on the first page.
Mr. Chair, yes, I would move to conceptually amend the now amended bill by deleting the sub 4 that was put in, the sub 14 that was put in, and to on line 3 of the bill add the words after C straw, after straw, grass, hay, or cereal grain straw in bales, and on line 4 and change the number 4 to 6.
It's amazing what 2 inches will do.
Mr. Chair, can we amend it so he takes the gun out of his back? Because I know this has to take a lot of doing.
kind of gentler.
We have a conceptual amendment. Any discussion? Anyone opposed? So moved.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3461 as amended to the floor of the House as a due pass recommendation.
Any discussion? Representative Hobson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am not a farmer, as some of my good colleagues on this committee are. Are there any groups that we're leaving out of this? Since we've made some additions, are we going to be faced with other groups coming forward and wishing to have been included?
Well, I'm sure we are, but we're a pretty exclusive or inclusive group here, and we're not going to worry about those other groups right now.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make the comment that anything the Republicans want in this area, I'll be glad to join them.
Oh, Mr. Chair, he said this area. So. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
As long as we're not trying to impose weight restrictions or a size restriction on a fishing boat, that's in time. Okay. Yeah.
Samantha, would you like to call the roll before this gets completely out of control here, please?
Mr. House?
Yes.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative
Bugala?
Yes.
Representative
Shire?
Aye.
Representative Jefferson? Yes. Aye.
Yes.
I declare a conflict of interest because I ship products of grass seed and mint leaves, and I vote yes.
Aye.
House Bill 3461. Received the majority of votes, declared passed. Mr. Chair, I would be honored if I could carry the bill. It'd be all right.
It's Representative Byer's bill, but Mr. Chair, if Representative Clark wants to carry my bill, I'd be happy to have him do it.
He's getting so many of his passed in here today that probably he does need a little help.
I would like to point out, though, that no declarations.
I'd like to second that, if possible.
I believe we should yell loud when he wants to, whatever it is, suspend the rules.
Visual aid.
Yeah, visual aid. We get nervous.
Yeah, real nervous.
After those black pants.
I was thinking about giving the new dancing bill.
I would probably decline. Did we close the work session on that, Samantha? Anyway, we did now. HJR 39, we're not going to hear that bill. It's dead. Now we'll open the short session on House Bill 2118. And this is a Department of Ag bill. Harrison, can you give us the long history on this bill?
I'm not sure I'm prepared to give the long history, Chair members, but I'm happy to tell you this is a bill, this is an amendment that guts the language, so we don't need a hand in grocer on this one. This is a bill that originally proposed to give the Department of Agriculture authority to declare weed control emergencies and where local authorities were not able to step in and handle the emergency to give direction to private landowners to control those weeds. If landowners did not step in, it gave the department authority to go onto private land, control the weed emergency, and then bill the landowner. There have been sort of a long history of this, which I think the agency is better prepared to talk about than I am. What this amendment does, as I say, is delete all of that language and instead give the department, in consultation with the state weed board, authority to study the 92 or so noxious weeds that are that have never been studied in terms of their economic and environmental effects, and in terms of the effectiveness and efficiency of current weed control practices. I should clarify my statement: of those 92 declared weeds, tansy ragwort has been studied.
Well, Chuck, you and Mr. Weedman like to come up here.
Need to be sprayed.
Mr. Chairman, Chuck Craig with Department of Agriculture. With me is Dan Hilburn, administrator of our plant division. Gut and stuff amendments to House Bill 2118 are what we arrived at after considerable effort working with the work group of stakeholders on this issue. We decided that we really weren't going to achieve agreement on new authority to go on land and control weeds, but that we needed more fundamental study that could help us determine what direction to go in the future, that and that this bill is a reflection of our attempt to put that in writing and describe what we would like to have the legislature direct us to do. It is an important issue all over the state, and I think that having a bill that directs the agency to do this kind of in-depth study with stakeholders would be very valuable for the future.
We have a fiscal impact statement on this issue.
We didn't. I don't think that we submitted any cost fiscal on this, Mr. Chair. We were going to do it with existing resources.
Okay. And you're going to then come back to the next legislative session and either introduce then a new bill or something, I would suppose.
I think we should have done this in the first place, frankly. But
that seems to be what I heard out there. Or I'll send the money to the counties and let them do it. And that was what I kept hearing from my counties, that they'd like, certainly like to have more help. But I understand the politics, and sometimes it takes a little heavier hand of the state to oversee situations, even when local people are might be intimidated. So do you have any comment on this?
For the record, my name is Dan Hilburn. I'm with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. I would just comment that in the discussions we had with the various stakeholder groups, everybody agreed that noxious weeds are a very serious problem and getting worse in the state. The problem was that people had different ideas on how to address that problem. And so I really believe that this bill is a good idea, and I think it can be done with existing resources or with the possibility of getting a grant from the state weed board. So I think it's something that's been needed, and hopefully there'll be some recommendations that'll come out of this bill that will include out of the study that'll include a comprehensive plan for the state, so that we can get the state and the counties and the various federal agencies that are working on noxious weeds all aimed in the same direction and coordinating efforts rather than everybody doing their own thing as they are now.
So with that, if there isn't any questions, we have the dash one, which is basically becomes the bill.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the dash one and House Bill 2118.
Any discussion? Anyone opposed?
My only comment, Mr. Chair, is that I've never seen a study that didn't cost a lot of money.
This may be the first one.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a comment, though, that it's still very insignificant compared to the amount of money that these weeds cost people in the state of Oregon. I'm glad to support them.
Anyone opposed? Adopted the dash one.
Mr. Chair, I move the House Bill 2118 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Any discussion? Matthew, I'd like to call the roll, please. Thanks, Dan. Chuck.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes.
Aye.
Representative Decker?
Yes.
Representative Hoffman?
Yes.
Representative Crouch?
Indeed, yes.
Representative Crumlin?
Aye.
House Bill 2118 has received the necessary votes and has moved to the floor with a due pass. I wonder, Representative Hoffman, would you like to carry this bill?
Oh, thank you. I'd like
to. Yeah, great. So, carry it. And with that, we'll close the work session on 2118. Next, that concludes all of our House bills we're going to deal with. Next week, we'll start on Senate bills. We have currently 9 of them in the committee. We have, how many meetings do we have between now and the 19th of May? We have five
meetings, Mr. Chair.
Five meetings, so we'll probably try to take about two.
Let's
two a day.
Four at a time.
Pardon?
Stacking up four at a time. We're going to get some more.
Well, right now we've kind of scattered them out too, and then as more come in, we'll add them. Next week, we're going to start off with some forestry issues, Senate Bill 224 and 226. They're wildfire protection agreements and forestry fire protection issues. So we'll start out Tuesday with those and may add some more if we're probably not there. But we'll just be adding to the 9 we have as they keep coming over. But we should have something every day in the next 5 sessions between now and May the 19th for the Senate bills. So with that, thanks for the good work today, and we stand adjourned.
Yeah. Chairman Lee? Yeah.